And good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday morning. It's September 9th. I've got 57 degrees here in Old Town Park City, 59 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Hayes. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. As we kick off a new work week here, we're starting off with kind of a similar trend from this past weekend with some very warm conditions out there. Temperatures well above average through the weekend, and I think that's the way to be as we go into our Monday afternoon. So if you're in the Heber Valley, look for those high temperatures to climb into the upper 80s to around 90 degrees this afternoon. And in Park City, temperatures climbing into the 80s as well. There will be a 30 to 40% chance of a few pop-up showers and thunderstorms scattered around the area. Now, I don't think it'll be a complete washout in the afternoon, but there will be a chance of some of those pop-ups developing that could influence your outdoor plans for about an hour or so. So keep that in mind. Keep an eye to the sky. And remember, when thunder roars, just head indoors. But that chance will be around for us today. Now, as we go into your Tuesday, expect more of the same. Partly cloudy skies will keep that isolated to scattered chance of a few pop-up showers and storms. I do think a little better chance across most of the Heber Valley heading up into Park City as we go into your Tuesday afternoon as opposed to this afternoon. So I think a little better chance for your Tuesday with highs in Park City around the in the low to mid 80s and highs in the Heber Valley in the upper 80s to low 90s for highs. But we get a little bit of a break on Wednesday from the rain chances. But here's the deal. We're going to be looking at those winds really picking up out of the south and southwest as we go into your Wednesday afternoon. And those are the winds of change, folks. We're going to be talking about a big change heading our way as we get towards the latter half of the week. So Wednesday, the winds pick up. That could lead to some fire concerns out there with wind, strong winds out of the south and west and very low humidity levels. So keep that in mind. And then as we go into your Thursday, we're going to introduce another chance of scattered showers and storms, both in Park City and in the Heber Valley as a cold front moves through. And this time, you know, we say cold fronts during the summer, they don't really cool us down that much. This cold front actually will be a cold front, and when it arrives, we will know it. Not only are we talking about the strong wind gusts, the chance of scattered showers and storms, but a big drop in our temperatures. So if you're heading in across around Park City as we go throughout your Thursday into Friday, look for high temperatures only in the 60s with overnight lows by Friday morning, likely down into the at least upper 30s. That's in Park City. And then, of course, in the Heber Valley, we're looking at, again, that same chance of rain and wind on your Wednesday heading into Thursday. And then that big cool down, even in the Heber Valley, highs only in the low to mid 70s as you get towards your Thursday and Friday. And again, by Friday morning, many of those cooler spots in the nooks and crannies there could actually flirt with the freezing mark by the time we get towards your Friday morning. So some big changes there, and it looks to remain dry and overall very cool and comfortable with below average temperatures into the weekend. So Leslie, get ready for a big change. But before we get there, we still have summer for the next few days.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Cedric.
Thank you.
Stay tuned. We'll be checking in with Summit County Health Department Director and Deputy Director Phil Bondurant and Kendra Babritz with an update on salmonella in eggs and the community health assessment. Park City Municipal Economic Development Program Manager and Staff Liaison to the Arts Board, Jenny Dearson, takes a look at some of the art projects that the board has approved and the RFPs for new public art to start. Executive Director of Park City Performing Arts Foundation, Ember Conley, with a preview of this year's main stage performances, and Park City Education Foundation President and CEO Ingrid Whitley is joined by Vice President of Advancement Jen Bello with an update on some of the programs that the foundation offers. Taking a look at some local news now, the high-profile Cedar Crest Village, a proposed town-sized development in Whitesville, has disappeared from the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission's agenda. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that discussions have gotten granular.
Discussions between Cedar Crest's would-be developers and the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission are now deep in the weeds, says Peter Barnes, Summit County's Community Development Director.
I don't think it's out of hand, but it got seriously complex and very nuanced in the discussion. I think Planning Commission and the applicant and the public are all frustrated.
Barnes says the developers have been reluctant or unable to answer some of the planning commissioner's more direct questions during past public hearings.
Probably, you know, the one that comes up most often is the traffic study and the affordability component. and what is actually really being proposed in terms of density, and not what is being asked for, but what might be achievable on the lots.
Larry H. Miller Real Estate and Ivory Homes have proposed 2,000 units phased in over decades, placing those units strategically to preserve open space. The decades-long build-out is part of what Barnes says is making discussions and precise predictions difficult. The developers are asking the county to rezone the area from agricultural to village overlay, a new category created to concentrate future east side growth in unincorporated areas like Hoytsville that have their own unique community character. But the county's village overlay code allows 4 units per acre, which would create the potential for double the units Larry H. Miller and Ivory are proposing. While they hit the drawing board, the Summit County Planning Department has taken the item off the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission's agenda.
And we will completely re-notice a new public hearing when the appropriate level of information comes into play.
A Larry H. Miller Real Estate spokesperson says they don't have updates to share yet about the behind-the-scenes dialogue. It's been 1 year since a subcommittee of local landowners and planning officials recommended the village idea to the Planning Commission. It was originally in the hands of landowners, including 3 of the biggest farming families, who say traditional farming is on the decline in the Hoytsville area. They spoke with developers and chose Miller and Ivory to carry the baton to the Planning Commission and eventually the Summit County Council. Barnes says the applicants will likely want to appear before the council as soon as possible, but he doesn't know if that can happen before the end of the year. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update on the salmonella cases happening across the country, as well as the latest on the community health assessment, I have Summit County Health Department Director Phil Bondurant, along with Deputy Director Kendra Babbitts. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Leslie.
Phil, let's just start with the phone calls that you had received over the week and concern over the salmonella outbreak in eggs. So what do you know at this point?
Yeah, I don't know more than what has been shared in the news, the national news, but I do think there was a bit of confusion, and I appreciate the community being as aware and as up to speed on the news, especially around public health news as they are. But over the course of the weekend, I believe there was a report that went out that Fresh Market was associated with selling some of these eggs that have been identified as contaminated with salmonella. And I wanted to make sure it was clear to the community that it's not Fresh Market in terms of what we have here in Utah, but it's Tony's Fresh Market, which is a chain in the upper northern Midwest that sold these eggs that were produced in that region. And so I was able to have conversations with a few folks through text and calls, just letting them know that our local Fresh Market is not a retailer of these eggs, and that any time that you use eggs, make sure you cook them thoroughly, that you're washing them if you have concerns about it. But that at this time, the one case we have in Utah related to the salmonella cases associated with eggs was they ate eggs back in the Midwest from these retailers. We haven't had, as far as I'm aware, as of Friday, we haven't had any of these eggs sold here in Utah, and the risk of salmonella associated with that outbreak is very minimal.
So where does the salmonella come from?
Well, it comes from the chickens when it lays the eggs. Essentially, it's not necessarily a clean situation, and so the salmonella is on the case or the shell of the egg, and then as it's produced, they wash them and bleach them, so we get those white eggs. If you've seen farm eggs, they're different colors, and they have other things on them, but the eggs we see in the store have been through a process of pasteurization and cleaning and bleaching, so they look nice. And unfortunately, in this situation, it appears as though somewhere the process was contaminated and that it didn't go through the entire cleansing process, which contaminated a batch of eggs that came out of that plant.
All right, but if it's on the shell, you break the egg. You don't eat the shell, so how does it get into the egg? How do you get sick?
Yeah, well, you think about breaking that egg, there's always a little bit of that outer casing or the shell that might make its way into the egg. And so if you like your eggs running like I do, or over easy, you might find a little bit of contamination in there. So if you do have eggs and you're concerned about that salmonella that you don't cook all your eggs through, you can wash them essentially with some hot water and soap, and that will also take care of the salmonella. But if you ever have eggs that you're concerned about, we always encourage folks to throw them out and just pick up a new batch of eggs.
Okay, so if eggs are cooked thoroughly, it's not an issue?
Yes, that's the general recommendation.
Oh, good. That's why I don't eat runny eggs. Okay. Or, well, and I guess that's another thing too, right? People love cookie dough. and that's why you probably shouldn't eat raw cookie dough.
Exactly.
Huh. Okay. Hey, in other news, Colville City was designated as a Healthy Utah community by Get Healthy Utah. So what does this mean?
Yeah, that happened back, I think it was early summer. Mm-hmm. And that's really just the result of health department staff, mainly Tabitha Allred, working with Mayor Marsh in Colville to celebrate and highlight some of the things that they've done to increase walkability, increase the programming that they have available for their residents and their children, just to really highlight the things they're doing to increase activity in that area. And Kendra, I know that you work closely with Tabitha and the group in health promotion. I don't know if you have anything you'd like to add.
So Colville's done a really great job specifically for Get Healthy Utah. They're focused on increasing physical activity, increasing mental health, which a part of that is being physically active, being able to do that outdoors in the wonderful area that we live in. There's so many opportunities to do that. So physical activity, mental health, making sure that we're being proactive about those healthy lifestyles that we have available here.
All right. Basically, any town in Summit County could have applied for this?
Yes, and in fact, they're looking for more folks to apply every year. And there are certain check boxes that each can meet is a designation for Get Healthy Utah, and they can work toward moving up through those designations as well.
Okay, and we're getting to that time, you know, kids back in school, lots of people in close quarters. What does that mean then in terms of projecting for the respiratory virus issues that we will no doubt see?
Yeah, as we transition today and we start to see some of the, or we transition into that season and we start to see some of the leaves changing today, that means that it's respiratory disease season with flu, RSV, COVID, all of that stuff. Kids back to school. What I found unique about the last couple of months is even though it was summertime, we had quite a few people that had tested positive for COVID. And it's traditionally not a time where we are indoors as much as we will be. And so it's really unique and fascinating to be honest, of the way that this disease is developing and manifesting itself. And so right now we continue to watch that with our respiratory disease dashboard that's kept up by our epidemiologist, Nancy Porter. You can visit that dashboard at any time at summitcountyhealth.org and see where the numbers are at. The data still indicate that we're trending just like we have in past years. You know, the COVID numbers aren't quite what they used to be because tests aren't reportable anymore and individuals are still testing, which is really promising to hear that they're taking those precautions. But as we transition into this fall time and we start to see the holidays around the corner and those times where kids are back in school, we should expect those respiratory diseases to be on the rise, and that's what we're seeing.
All right. So, I mean, if somebody were to test for COVID, it comes back negative. It's what, your common cold?
Yeah, and I think in most cases, COVID and the common cold are somewhat being treated the same. We're not seeing the hospitalizations that are associated with that. And so we're asking that you treat a common cold, COVID, the flu, any of that as you normally would, where stay home for a few days until you feel better, till the symptoms have subsided for at least 24 hours, the fever's gone for 24 hours, and you feel better. And that's that's us doing our part to limit transmission. We're not going to be able to eliminate it, but really what can we do to minimize that and getting those that are around us sick?
Yeah, so I mean, if that's just the case, then why would somebody want to go out and get another COVID vaccine?
Yeah, and I think it's a very similar conversation to why would somebody want to get a flu vaccine, right? These are preventative measures that we take to keep ourselves healthy. I personally don't enjoy being sick. I don't know many that do. There's never a convenient time to be sick. And if there are opportunities or methods that can keep us healthy and strong and pushing through ski season, for many that's extremely important, being out on the slopes, being around family members and protecting those with compromised immune systems, our loved ones that are more experienced or older, we want to protect them as well. So the vaccines afford protection for all of those things. It keeps us happy, it keeps us healthy, it keeps those around us healthy, but it also protects the younger ones and the older population from dealing with sickness and illness that really we can minimize, almost eliminate if we take the proper steps.
All right. And then what do people need to know then in terms of receiving those vaccines? Are there, you'd mentioned RSV, is there a vaccine for that as well?
There is a RSV vaccine that was new within the last year. It's had highly positive reviews and outcomes associated with that. It is for a select population. and some immunocompromised individuals, individuals over 65. So we encourage those that might be interested or concerned about RSV that they would contact their primary care physician, or if that is not an option for them, they can always reach out to us at the health department and speak with one of our clinicians, and they can provide all the information and answer any questions related to RSV. But in regards to all vaccines, our data indicate that the first week of October, first and second week of October, is the best for flu and COVID. That's when we see our spikes happen. And so we would encourage folks to wait until that time frame, just a few weeks out. Our numbers are starting to trickle in terms of the vaccines that we have. We have flu currently for VFC and for private insurance. And we also are waiting on our COVID stuff to get here so that we can kick off our drive-through clinics that first week of October.
All right. Kendra, I know you wanted some time to speak to the community health assessment. Time's running out here, right, to get that done?
Yes. As of Friday, we have 517 responses, which is wonderful, but we would love to get to 1,000. That survey will be open but through November 1st. We want to make sure that everyone can get their responses in by then so we can incorporate their responses into our final report in December. So if anyone has a chance to take that survey or hasn't had a chance to take it, go to our website at summitcountyhealth.org. Click the bright pink button on the landing page there to take that. It should take about 10 to 15 minutes to complete. And that's something where we really want to hear from everyone in the community. So anyone who not only lives here, but works here, plays here, we want to know what you love about Summit County, what you think could improve about Summit County, because this is an opportunity to really elevate the voices in the community in addition to other data sources that we have regarding health outcomes and public health data. So we will be combining all of those data sources to influence the next 5 years of programming and services that the health department provides. So it's a really great opportunity to have your voice heard.
Okay, so I mean, if you get people saying that they want a certain thing, that's something the health department's going to go after?
Absolutely. There are quite a few questions that have open responses where people can write in what they want to see changed, what they like about the community. And what's great about Summit County is we work really closely with all of our partners here, whether that's partners within the county departments or partners external to the county, to get things done and really influence the lives here of folks in Summit County.
Okay. And can you give me any examples in terms of things that the community health assessment has done previously?
So the community health assessment is something that's required to do every 5 years. And so that might determine maybe we need to put more resources into providing vaccinations for certain populations. Maybe people are concerned that there's a food desert in their community and we can help influence more opportunities for fresh produce to come to the community. It could be anything that affects health. So anything even on the policy side regarding housing, those are things that we would love to partner with if that's something that the community prioritizes.
All right, so is this federal or state?
This is a state requirement. It's also required for us to receive ongoing funding. And another thing that we've been working toward is public health accreditation. And so accreditation is something we want to make sure that we have the best data available from our community to show that we are doing the best for our community.
Okay. You can also take it in Spanish. How are you getting the word out to the Spanish-speaking folks?
So our epidemiologist, Nancy Porter, is overseeing this effort, and she's working very closely with a lot of the Spanish-speaking community organizations here, attending tabling events, making sure we have interpreters available at those events. We have all of our materials, flyers, bookmarks, stickers, all of that is in Spanish as well, so there are plenty of opportunities, and if there are any questions or people would like us to go and attend their events, you can contact us as well. And ask for that.
Okay. And then, Phil, you've got another climate change and public health speaker coming up. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we're really excited about this one, Leslie. It's titled Extreme Weather and Drought, Adapting Agricultural Practices. And we're holding this one at the DeGioia Center. And we're presenting local voices and people that are dealing with adapting to a changing environment and their agricultural practices. We have four speakers coming representing local agricultural producers, the USDA, consulting firms, and then Bill White Farms is represented as well on some of the practices they're doing there. It's moderated by USU, Elizabeth Cohen, the director at USU Extension, and the 4-H coordinator, Haley Davis, are moderating. The DeGioia Center has been kind enough to let us use some space there. Spots are filling up quick, and given the the individuals that are speaking and the wealth of knowledge that they're going to share, as well as the interest from the community, especially on our east side, not only about what these producers are doing to adapt, but provide insight to some of our small agricultural practices on the east side, what they might be able to change moving forward. We've seen a significant interest in this event. And so I'm really excited. It's September 18th over at the DeGioia Center from 5:30 to 8. 5:30 to 6 is the kind of meet and greet. We'll have some food there for folks to munch on before the event, and then at 6 to 7:30 we really get into it, and then 7:30 to 8 is questions afterwards. And so the staff have done a wonderful job. Emily Quinton, has our sustainability director, has led this effort, and we've got quite a few individuals inside the health department leading the charge on this, and I'm really proud of them and their efforts and what they've put together.
Okay, people do need to RSVP?
Yeah, we're asking individuals to register, and you can do that at summitcountyhealth.org, and on the front page there's also another button there that people can register for that event. Spots are filling up quick, and we have local elected officials, prominent agricultural families attending, and so I'm really excited to hear what we can learn.
Okay. Hey, Phil, Kendra, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, the new mining sculpture is the latest piece of art to be funded by Park City there at the Mile Zero on the rail trail, a piece of work that was selected by Park City's Public Art Advisory Board. In the studio with details, more details about that board and what it does, I have Jenny Dearson. She serves as the staff liaison to the Park City Art Advisory Board. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning.
Maybe just start by telling us a little bit about the efforts, the city's efforts to fund public art.
Yeah, so, you know, I just love the public art in Park City. I think one of the things that's so unique about our collection is that it really represents our community. Sometimes you go to other towns and they'll have artists, national artists, and other things they put on display. But the 150 works that we have really represents who we are, our history, and it's just such a great representation. The first piece of public art is called Park Cityscape, and that was acquired in 1984 by the then Park City Art Foundation. This work is still in our collection and is in the garden that is just south of the Miners Hospital. So if you haven't ever been by to see that, it's a fun one to stop by. The public art board and policy was actually established by the council in 2004 and has been revised a few times. We have two funding sources. One is annual capital allocations that the council makes through their budget process, and two is a percent for arts policy for capital facilities. That for instance, when the library was renovated, we had a percent for arts for that artwork there.
And that's basically about a percent then of the total project cost?
That is correct.
So, I mean, what does something like that raise? Any idea?
Yeah, for instance, I think the remodel on the library was about $8 million, so we got $80,000 to acquire a piece of public art for that specific facility. So quite a good chunk of change, and, you know, it's really important for us to, I think, have artwork that goes with the capital facilities, but then also have a separate allocation of funding so we can do other things such as the utility box program, because that wouldn't be possible without that other funding allocation. But I also wanted to mention that the mayor appoints the public art board with the consent of the city council. The public art board is made up of 8 residents that live in Park City. They each serve 3-year terms and can serve no more than 2 terms. We do not currently have any openings, but we will next spring and summer. And then I think, you know, the work that the Public Art Board has been doing is quite incredible. They are just chugging along with lots of things.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in just a second here, though. But I wanted to ask you, you mentioned 150 pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are we, each utility box is a piece of art?
It is a piece of art. And so over the last couple of years, we have acquired, I don't know, I think we're up to 84 works there from local community artists and also some of our youth.
Okay. And then in terms of where the rest of this art is, I mean, of course, we've seen stuff there in front of the Mark, in front of the City Hall when they did the renovation there. Where are some of the others?
I think we have about 10 tunnel murals. So as you're on Poison Creek or on the rail trail, there's murals there. There's also some artwork over by the McPullen Barn. If you go under the crosswalk there, there's some artwork in our police station and our ice arena on the outside of the ice arena. So we have this really great public art map. If people aren't familiar with where our collection is, you can actually click on the pieces and take a little hike to go explore some of the artwork that we have.
All right, where would somebody find that?
If you just go to parkcity.org and you click on the Public Art Advisory Board, the link to the map is right there, and you can just, there's images and lots of information about each piece in the collection. And then another one I forgot to mention is we just worked with the Historic Preservation Board, and all of the pieces that the city acquires every single year that are the historic preservation pieces, those are all displayed in City Hall. So you can learn about each of those also historic preservation pieces and see those pieces of art as well.
All right. So any thought about trying to sign some of this stuff, and maybe with a QR code so that people could do that?
We are working on that. They will likely be installed by the end of the week. Actually, there is a QR code. General information will be on that sign, but if you click that QR code, it tells you a lot more information about the artist and the full history of the piece.
Okay, well then let's talk a little bit more about some of the other things that you have been working on. I quickly mentioned the newest piece there at Bonanza Drive.
Yeah, so that was a great collaboration with the Friends of Ski Mining Mountain History, and we just completed that piece. Another thing that we've been working on is just last Thursday, the City Council approved phase 3 of the empowerment project. So that's 44 more utility boxes that we will be wrapping. Leslie, I do think that is the final phase of this project. But again, very exciting collaboration with Rocky Mountain Power and with the council, and a great way to really work with some of our local youth and local artists. And then other things we've been up to, a couple years ago, we had some challenges with graffiti. So we've really spent the time to go throughout all of the murals in Park City and seal those with a graffiti sealant, which makes it a lot easier for cleanup for us. But that's taken a lot of work, and thanks to our Parks Department for helping out with that specific project. And then also a couple other repairs with a piece at the library. We had a leak, so we had to order a new panel. And then the piece out at Quinn's Junction, some of the poles kind of moved due to extreme weather, and that artist was able to come back out and fix that piece for us.
Okay, and the art board also looking ahead at several other projects, and you've got, in the meantime, 3 requests for proposals up for bid now. So what would those do?
Yes, so we have 3 of them, like you mentioned. One is for library study room artwork. These proposals are due on October 25th, and the RFP is looking for 2-dimensional framed artwork for the study rooms in the library. If you haven't been to the study rooms, number one, I would recommend it. They're super nice to get work done. But they're a little stark, they're very white, and so in collaboration with the library team, we decided it would be a great community amenity to add artwork to these 8 rooms. And so again, another great opportunity for local or regional artists. If you're looking to apply, each artist will be selected to receive $5,000 for their original framed artwork. And the theme for this project is called Park City's Palette. So we're looking for artwork that represents Park City's mountains, natures and trails, local landmarks, wildlife, outdoor adventure, heritage, Main Street, and sunrise and sunsets. So a great opportunity for local artists if they're looking to participate. And then if you haven't heard, the city is installing 19 new bus stops. And so we also have a bus stop artwork RFP out. Those RFPs are due on October 30th. And we're looking for individual artists to propose artwork in each of the new bus stops. Most of this artwork will be placed on panels on the new bus stops themselves. And some of the stops do not have shelters, but rather a pole or a bench. So we're asking artists to consider kind of being creative with that negative space and coming up with some ideas or sculptural elements on those specific stops. The theme for this project is timeless connections, and we're hoping to receive artwork proposals that help make connections to Park City's past, present, and future.
And how much is available for them to do that?
So it is $5,000 per stop, so a total of $95,000. So artists, they can apply multiple artworks for multiple bus stops, but again, looking for individual, not looking for someone to come in and pitch a whole project for all 19 bus stops, if that makes sense.
Okay, and then you have one more RFP out there for what?
Yes, just this last Saturday, we had a ribbon cutting for the newly updated Creekside Bike Park. As we were collaborating with the rec department, we understood there was a need for a shade structure over there. So we are looking for an artistic shade structure. That RFP will close on November 5th. And so we're hoping to install that next spring. But really just looking for a place to have a little shade over there where people can hang out and watch people play at the bike park out there by Creekside.
Okay. Any idea how much there is in terms of funding in the budget for all of this? It sounds like you've got
some
stockpile.
So the total public art budget, again, many thanks to the City Council for their allocations, but we have a total budget of around $500,000. based on our committed project, we're all the way down to 18,000. So we're trying to release the RFPs, get ahead of the next summer building schedule, and get these projects out there for the community. I did also want to mention, Leslie, we have a meeting tonight. So if anyone's ever interested in listening to the Public Art Board and hearing how we plan some of these things and allocate the funding, anyone's welcome to attend that meeting. They are held the second Monday of every month at 5 o'clock, and people can join either via Zoom or come join us up in the executive conference room at City Hall.
Okay, and then that $500,000, was that both from the city annual budget allocation in addition to all of the capital projects?
That is correct.
Okay, what's the allocation each budget year? Just
it depends on how much the board wants to request of the council, and then also as the council deliberates all the budgets, it just depends every year. But again, the council's been very generous, giving us somewhere around $100,000 to $50,000 annually.
Great.
In the recent years.
All right. Jenny, anything else?
Nope. Just it's a great time to get out there and see the public art. So please apply if you're interested, or let artists know, and we'll see you out there.
Okay. Jenny Dearson, thank you. Park City Performing Arts has released its upcoming main stage series schedule, and on the phone with a preview, I have the executive director of Park City Performing Arts, Amber Conley. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Morning, Leslie.
Hey, just a quick note about the name change, and I guess I wanted to clarify that before it was changed to Park City Institute, it was actually known as the Park City Performing Arts Foundation. So have you dropped Foundation and just Park City Performing Arts?
We've made it easier for people to, instead of having to type the entire foundation off. So if we still, I mean, everything, you know, legally is Foundation, but we're doing Park City Performing Arts.
Got it. Okay, taking a look at the calendar then this coming winter, is it totally booked, or will you be adding to it?
We have we have two shows that are on hold that we're not ready to announce. We're waiting on final contracts. And if those happen, we would, of course, announce those as soon as we get those. But for the most part, we're fully booked.
Okay, and as you kind of look to put this schedule together, what is it that you were looking for?
So it's very different than, of course, our Concerts on the Slopes, which is all outdoor concert music. This series, of course, really takes into account of the Eccles Center here in Park City. So we have speakers, we have some contemporary dance, and then, of course, we build in, really excited for a film that we're going to be partnering with Sundance and a few other of our community partners. And, of course, we have to pull in some music.
Okay, and speaking of Sundance, I kind of noticed the dates there that you have blocked off the entire 11 days for the Eccles. Didn't Sundance cut back their use to just like the first 5 days or something?
Yeah, so, you know, we work directly with Sundance, and we won't know until a month, exactly what their schedule is. But we go ahead and block out the Eccles Center for Sundance.
Okay, just in case.
Just in case, which we would love to have all 10 days.
Yeah, yeah. Do you keep that money as the foundation, or does that go to the Park City School District, the rental fee?
So the rental fee itself. So what we do is we work with Sundance. It's a contract. This is a great question. I'm glad you're asking that. And part of the contract is that we manage the theater, so all of the costs associated with that. And then we receive in return tickets that are available for our sponsors. So this is an exclusive benefit for our sponsors. And then also the school district receives tickets for the staff as well.
Great. Okay, so the 2024 Winter Series kicks off actually next week.
And you've got
Broadway singers coming to town. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so we one of the missions that we've really looked at is making sure that we're partnering with the community. And we've partnered with Excellence in Community. And what Excellence is it's a organization that brings in professional musicians around from Utah and provide free concerts. So this series, there's a series of four, and these are free concerts for the community. They have an all professional musicians. So we start off next week with Broadway musicians, and super excited to be a partner with them.
Okay, so there are tickets available, but no charge?
Exactly. So, you know, being able, you know, we would hate to have, well, we wouldn't hate it. We would actually love it. You know, for 2,000 people to show up for a free concert, and we can only bring in 1,200. So this is just a way for us to make sure that we have seats available.
Got it. All right. So
completely free.
All right. The October 2nd show, tell us about Black Violin.
Oh, Black Violin. So they're actually touring, and we found out they were touring. Black Violin has been around for about 20 years. These are classically trained violinists. And they really blend in this classical and hip-hop music. And their whole message is around thinking outside of the box and breaking stereotypes. And it is going to be an amazing show. I mean, if you have a minute, just download some of their music, and you're going to be excited to be there.
Okay. And you have, as with the Excellence in Community, you have several Nat Geo Live shows as well.
Yep. So Nat Geo Live went through kind of an iteration. So Disney actually owned them, and then they had some trouble, and then now they're back on. So Nat Geo Live, we have three explorers coming in. Andres Russo, he's an expert in volcanoes. Naledi Nadkarni is a forest ecologist, and she's actually lives here, works as a professor at the University of Utah, but is world-renowned for her studies in forest ecology in the rainforest. And then the last one is Doug Smith, absolutely phenomenal. He is a wolf expert with Yellowstone. All of these provide student outreach. And again, one of our expansions is for student outreach in all of Summit County. And so we're working with other schools besides just Park City School District.
Okay. And just a heads up, the Andy Grammer concert scheduled for October 19th already sold out.
Sold out in 5 hours. So we put that on sale earlier this summer. And, you know, we always have high hopes. I was blown away. Had no idea that he would sell out that fast. We have about 20 tickets left to this show. The good and the bad, if you want to see him, you can still see him. There's 20 tickets. But they're single tickets. So if you have a buddy that you want to sit with, you're not going to be able to sit with them.
Okay. And I also wanted to mention, you've got a couple of series that you're working on with Tom Kelly called Behind the Gold. You're going to be bringing in Olympic athletes that live here in Park City.
Yep. So Tom Kelly and I, of course, we're Rotary buddies. And I started hearing his stories, of course, of our beloved Olympians and Paralympians. And he just has this beautiful melodic voice that tells these stories of behind the gold, right? How did these individuals get to be champions? And so we've started a new series. This is a lead up to our 2034 Olympic Games. And we are, of course, taking advantage of what we have here in Park City. Ted Ligety, Chris Waddell, and Peekaboo Street, all scheduled to be in an interview type situation with, again, the voice of the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association Hall of Famer Tom Kelly.
Okay, and then you've got some big shows coming up as well. It's what Bill Nye, that Frozen sing-along is going to be huge.
Oh my God. You know, last year we tried this sing-along, and I'll be honest, I was thinking, okay, this is kind of silly. It was one of our best-selling shows. And what it is you bring in the family, you dress up, it's all interactive, and you watch the movie and sing along. And so we actually have two of those. We have Frozen, of course, during that holiday season, December 30th. And then we have Grease, March the 1st, so you can dress up in your best 50s.
Okay. Anything else that you want to highlight? I know people will be able to find this online this morning.
Yep, this morning. So I actually do. I have two. So I'm really excited to partner with Sundance for bringing Exhibiting Forgiveness back. And this is a partnership with Peace House, Mountain Mediation, Christian Center, Park City Wellness Team. Exhibiting Forgiveness is a really powerful biopic of a renowned artist, Titus Kaphar, who uses his art to break this generational trauma. So this is a community outreach. Peace House is going to be doing shelter tours earlier that day, and then we're going to take it in and watch the film. A note, this is not a family-friendly. This is a heavy film. So this is, you know, if you're going to bring kids, you need to make sure and have conversations with them prior. The other one I'm really excited about is King's Return. This is in celebration of Black History Month. This is a acapella quartet that is going to just blow our socks off.
Okay. Tickets online as well for all of the shows?
They are. So we're sending out tons of information. Our website is still kind of we're redoing our website. The website will be up later today, parkcitypa.org. And then we also have all of our information that's going through newsletters.
Okay. Amber, thanks so much.
Thanks, Leslie. Appreciate it.
Amber Conley is the Executive Director of Park City Performing Arts. KPCW.
Guests coming? Bring them to the museum. Sign up for summer hikes on our website, parkcityhistory.org. Click on mining to see what we've already stabilized. Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History, a committee of our nonprofit Park City Museum, is grateful to KPCW for sharing our message as we stabilize the crumbling remnants of our mining heritage.
Hi, I'm Mitchell Burns, Chief Operating Officer of Red Ledges, a proud supporter of KPCW. Red Ledges is located minutes from Park City and 12 miles from skiing at the Jordanelle Gondola at Deer Valley. Our club offers golf, tennis, 7-plus miles of trails, a water park, an equestrian center, plus events and activities for the whole family. Learn more about the lifestyle at redledges.com.
It's 8:50. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. In the studio now with an update from Park City Education Foundation, I have CEO Ingrid Whitley along with Vice President of Advancement, Jen Bello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you have rebranded the Beat the Call campaign. What are you calling it now?
We sure have. Yes, we are calling it Build the Foundation. Everyone's familiar with Beat the Call. It's been around for more than 20 years. And it was time to retire it. We were hearing from parents, you know, calling, who does phone calls, you know, that kind of thing. So times have changed, and we feel this is a much more positive, we're building together with our donors to support the school district. So, you know, $170 million of our tax dollars leave every year, and our schools are still great. They're amazing. And part of that is because people support the Ed Foundation, and we support the school district with about $1.5 million in funding every year. So Build the Foundation, very familiar, though, similar tactics to Beat the Call. There will still be contests between all the schools for the UPS store grant for 5,000, 3,000, or 2,000. Classes can win pizza parties or breakfast parties, because what Build the Foundation is all about is participation. So we ask every parent to donate, whether it's $2 per school day, which is $360, or joining Scholar Circle, which is $1,000. But we ask every parent to participate and donate something to, because it all comes back to our schools in program funding. And even a dollar counts. And so how these contests are based is on participation. So rather than the dollar amount each school raises, it's how many families are participating in those contests. So any gift counts since July 1, the start of the new fiscal year, and will go through October 4th. You'll be hearing a lot about it in your schools the weeks of September 23rd through October 4th. And again, there's competitions, there's prizes to win, teachers can win prizes, and it's all about encouraging full participation of our school community in giving to PCEF, and so then we can give back to over 100 programs our schools need.
All right, how much are you hoping to raise? I mean, what's kind of your average here?
So usually this is our parent appeal campaign, and we usually raise about $200,000. So when you think that a lot of that is made up of $1, $10, you know, $360 donations, last year we had 57% of parents participating in the program. We'd really love to get that to 60 or 65% of parents participating, because it really does take all of us to support our community schools.
Okay. You recently spent some of the money that you've raised to help with the new cell phone out of the classroom policy. How so?
Yes.
Yeah, so really exciting to start the school year at Treasure Mountain. We helped fund a cell phone pouch pilot. Last spring, the district surveyed parents. 1,500 parents and staff took that survey, and a vast majority of them were in favor of eliminating student cell phone use during the school day. And so as part of that survey, the district and the board, you know, passed a policy to support that initiative. We're also supporting a pilot program at Treasure. They're Yonder pouches. Students put their cell phone in the pouch for the duration of the school day, and are, you know, very supportive donors, including the Alnoba Lewis Family Foundation and the Roberts Rothy Fund for Perpetual Giving supported that pilot. We'll see how it goes. It's, you know, early, but good indications of a successful program so far, and based on how that goes, potentially expanding that into other schools next year. So we'll see how the rest of the school year goes with it.
Yeah, so how much do these pouches cost?
I don't remember the exact cost for each pouch. We supported the program with a $30,000 gift, so that provided enough pouches for every single student at Treasure, and then a bit of extra pouches in case of loss or damage. So, yeah.
And where are these pouches? I mean, just in the classroom?
Yeah, so each student carries their own pouch. They're given a pouch. They put their cell phone in at the beginning of the day. It's locked. And then every teacher has a magnet to unlock pouches at the end of the day, or in case of, you know, an emergency, the student needs to get into their phone. So those were the costs, the magnets and the pouches, yeah.
So the phones stay with the student then?
The phones stay with the student. They're not taken away. If, you know, for whatever reason, I think the pouch is damaged, students can keep it in the main office. Yeah.
Okay. And so you've got a ribbon cutting and another grand opening?
Yeah. So we just had, I think we talked last month, the ribbon cutting at Jeremy and McPullen, the new preschool and community centers. We're also very excited to celebrate phase one of the high school expansion, so the new CTE wing. That's going to happen on September 27th from 3 to 4:30. We're going to have students give tours of the new spaces. There's four different lab spaces: architecture and construction, culinary, arts and hospitality, health sciences, aviation. Did I remember all of that?
And a fab lab.
That's right. And so we're excited to see those. I haven't seen the space at all, so I'm really excited to get in there.
Oh, I've heard the space is pretty fab.
Yeah. Awesome.
our tax dollars at work here.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the Scholar Circle members. You'll have a reception for them right after that then?
Yes. So this ribbon cutting just came together this week, so we're still planning it, but we're hoping to have a little tailgate in the parking lot right afterward, because there is an away football game that Friday night. So in between the ribbon cutting and people leaving for the tailgate, of course, everyone's invited. You don't have to be a high school parent. We'll have a reception for our Scholar Circle members and potential members. And again, those are families that give $1,000 or more yearly to PCEF. They're really a base, a big base upon which we build the funding that we give back. And in speaking of that, the labs, PCEF provided $350,000 for a lot of the fabulous items inside of the labs that the
equipment,
students are using,
supplies,
all the equipment and supplies. So that was a big chunk, and we'll be doing a similar thing for the Ecker CTE when that's finished next year. So again, your tax dollars and your donor dollars at work, and that's what we do, is, you know, partner with the school district to provide these amazing places.
Yeah, these aren't Maytag ovens.
No.
should let people know that. Also, another your biggest fundraiser, I guess I was surprised to hear that the Red Apple Gala is your biggest fundraiser. That's happening October 5th. You still have a few tickets left?
We have a few tickets left. So two different things. So Running With That is our biggest fundraiser in terms of people. So, you know, we have about 1,500 participants in that, which is wonderful. The Red Apple Gala is our biggest fundraiser in terms of dollars raised. So, you know, together between the two, it's about $1 million. But the Red Apple Gala is about $700,000. It's critical. It is a critical start to the year fundraiser. And it's so much fun. The Montage does an amazing job supporting us. So we do have some tickets left. You can, you know, go on to our website, PCEF4kids.org, to make your parent appeal, build the foundation donation, to go on and buy a table or tickets. We'll, as soon as we have the final information for the Scholar Circle event, we'll have that up on there. So it is a font of information, and you can also follow along on our social media.
Okay, so it's October 5th at the Montage,
starts at 6 o'clock. It's 6 to 11, so there's a cocktail hour with a silent auction, and then dinner, live auction, casino and dancing and DJ, you know, afterwards. So it's a great time. Montage does have a few rooms left on their special price if you want to stay the night. And that is also presented by Zions Bank and Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. So huge thanks to them, because they cover the cost of the event.
Okay. And tickets are going for how much?
Tickets are $650 a person.
Okay. All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I think that's it. We hope to see everyone at the ribbon cutting. They yes. are amazing.
It's a fun fall and full fall. Yes. So many things to come out and celebrate. So we hope to see you there.
Okay. Ingrid, Jen, thanks so much for
Thank
your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.